National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
After weeks and weeks of the world focused on what was happening in the Vatican, it's important to return to domestic politics here in the United States and the impact of the Trump administration. This week on Register Radio, we're joined by Zelda Caldwell, senior writer for the National Catholic Register, to bring us an update on some of the important topics, especially related to Catholics, that we're facing as a church. And then Shannon Mullen is going to be having a conversation with me about what you need to know about stories that perhaps you've missed or stories that are worth revisiting. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director for EWTN News and host of Register Radio, joined in studio happily once again in Washington, D.C. by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and my co-host. Shannon, hello.
Hello, it's good to have you back.
It feels as though, well, it has been weeks since you and I have been able to have a chat together on this show. Obviously, I was based in Rome for the duration of the interregnum, and I know you were still here. Technology being what it was, sometimes it was difficult for all of us to connect, so thank you, and I can honestly say I have missed you over these weeks.
The feeling is mutual.
So, as I was mentioning, the Trump administration has been moving full force on a variety of fronts that often, at times, put them in conflict with the Catholic Church here in the United States and abroad. One of those issues relates to IVF and the question of human reproduction. To discuss some of this, as well as an important story about pilgrimages in the United States and around the world, we're joined by Zelda Caldwell, who is senior writer for the National Catholic Register. Zelda, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Is this your first time on Register Radio?
It is indeed.
It is your... All right. Well, welcome. It has been... we have been remiss, let's put it that way, in having you on. So thank you for joining us, and I look forward to having frequent conversations with you.
Thank you.
So let's start with the Trump administration's recent moves toward IVF. I know we're still waiting on a few elements of that, but what are we hearing and what are you writing about?
Well, over 3 months ago, President Trump released an executive order calling on his administration to come up with recommendations to expand access to in vitro fertilization, IVF, which had become a big issue during the presidential campaign after the Alabama State Supreme Court issued a ruling saying that embryos should be seen as people and treated as such. He weighed in saying he was the father of IVF. Anyway, it's almost, the deadline has passed for this plan, and so everyone is eagerly awaiting its release, and we're not sure exactly what it's going to be. It might have something to do with in vitro fertilization, since that's what he promised, but there are some indications that the administration might be promoting a growing field of medicine called restorative reproductive medicine, which goes after the infertility by addressing the root causes rather than just sending patients to IVF.
Okay.
Yeah, so the IVF is in the news all the time.
Yes.
It's very popular, widely used, but it's not a treatment for infertility.
Right.
Right? It doesn't... it's a technology for conceiving a child, but it is not, it doesn't address infertility. So, you know, one of the things that when Zelda and I talked about this story is what alternatives are there? I mean, for Catholics, it's just absolutely a moral nightmare, really, IVF, because as you know, It creates so many embryos, more embryos than anybody really knows what to do with.
Right.
And, as Catholics, we recognize those embryos as human life and human beings with inherent dignity. So we wanted Zelda's to look at what, if anything, is being done to address the root causes. But Zelda... the backdrop of this is that this is a national health crisis, right? What's going on with infertility in the United States?
Well, it's on the rise. Among married women, it increased from 6.7% from 2011 to 2015 to almost 9% between the years of 2015 to 2019. And men have been found to be, it's not just women, they're responsible for 40% of fertility issues. And with one study showed a decline in sperm count for men between 2007 and 2017 of 42%, which is huge. So it's a serious problem, and that's why IVF is such big business, because it affects so many people.
So the question, though, too, is in terms of root causes for the infertility, combined, though, also with decisions on the part of couples not to have children, which is also contributing to the rising sort of declining fertility and the reduction in replacement population. So we're looking at something of a perfect storm here. And IVF, then, as a solution, though, creates as many problems as it could potentially be solving, right?
Yeah, and we're talking about Trump being committed on some level to expanding access to IVF. Well, what will that look like? We don't really know. But expanding it means expanding also the moral consequences of IVF. And it's always important, you know, when we write about it at the Register, you know, to remind people why exactly the Catholic Church is
right.
Again,
because we are kind of we add that to every article we do on IVF, right?
It's a teachable moment, but it's something that we have to. It's not just because, you know, we want to be difficult, right?
But, right. We're not capricious about this, or there are reasons why the Church believes this and teaches this.
Yeah, exactly. But it is a serious problem. So, you know, and Catholic couples, faithful Catholic couples who want to stick to the teachings of the Church, they wrestle with this issue all the time. They have friends and family members. Why don't you try IVF? You know, there's a lot of societal pressure put on them. So this alternative approach, which is really more what's the underlying reason, is so important to get that message out to people.
Now, Zelda, if I'm remembering, part of this current push by the Trump administration was partly in reaction to what happened in like Alabama and the decisions on some of the state governments to try to, quote, protect IVF. Is this viewed at this point as significant overreach? What is the political value for the Trump administration to go down this road?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think in some ways Trump was he said himself that he thought that the midterm elections in 2022 went so badly because Republicans were pro-life. I don't think that was actually the case, but he has shown a tendency to be a little knee-jerk on not wanting to seem pro-life. And so he went out on a limb after that Alabama State Supreme Court decision saying he is pro-IVF. And there were some Republicans that sided with him. In fact, the National Republican Senatorial Committee released a memo to all its candidates saying you have to come out in favor of IVF.
Yeah, so it's the Church also often seems like a lone voice on this issue.
Right.
But that, so what? You know, that's the way it's got to be. But it's so important to realize, for Catholics especially, to realize that there are all alternatives. You know, we talk about the underlying reasons for this fertility crisis. Zelda, what are some of those underlying conditions that are contributing to this, do you think?
The Ethics and Public Policy Center and Heritage Foundation have published a symposium of articles on the subject, gathering information and research from doctors and medical professionals. And they found that there are several causes, endometriosis, something called polycystic ovary syndrome, uterine fibroids in women, and insulin resistance, high blood pressure, and poor sperm quality in men. A lot of times when a couple experiences infertility, they send them almost immediately to an IVF clinic. And they don't do a full workup of all of their health issues. The problem with that is they don't get resolved. And even if they do end up having a child from IVF, the next time they try, they're going to have the same problems again. And so the idea is this restorative reproductive medicine addresses these health problems sometimes once and for all, rather than using what they call a Band-Aid approach of IVF.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's turn a little bit to another story that you've been following, and that, of course, is pilgrimages.
Yes, Zelda had a great piece that went up on the Register's website and also in our print issue about pilgrimages having a moment. Zelda, what do you mean by that? Pilgrimages are having a moment.
Well, I think everybody, I mean, you probably experienced this yourself when you talk to your friends about where they travel. I keep hearing more and more people say, I would really like to go on a Camino, or I'd like to go on a pilgrimage.
The list is a very long one of people who have said that. Just the Camino.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a way of, I don't know, for some people, it's a way of visiting sites where saints, walking where things happened, sacred places. And for other people, it's a way of getting away from work, from technology, and having some time to pray, and oftentimes having some time to be with other people and pray, which is not something they have a lot of experience doing in their lives, even if they're going to church, to Mass all the time.
Yeah, of course, this is happening where we had last year in 2024, mm-hmm. the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage, these four routes that converged on Indianapolis. Right now, a lot of people don't realize it, but there's National Eucharistic Pilgrimage 2.0, which is 2025, right. which is now underway. And it started from Indianapolis, and it'll go for 36 days and conclude on Corpus Christi Sunday in Los Angeles on, I think, the 22nd of June, if I have that date right. So again, people are on the move, and but there's a lot of things on Zelda's bucket list, and even reporting this story, she came across some really interesting initiatives out there that, mm-hmm. that just sound great.
There's a Maryland Camino. This is the first year. It goes from southern Maryland, where the first Catholics came, all the way up north. To the Elizabeth Seton Shrine, and it's 14 days, and Shannon said I could go. I'm still thinking about it because it would involve sleeping in a tent for part of it.
Right. Well, it's a true pilgrimage experience, right?
Exactly. But it sounds great. They pray the rosary. They go to churches all the way. They're going to be going by our studio here in Washington. And onto the Basilica, and then, but I think these things, there's just one big one in New Hampshire that Matt McDonald reported on. It's happening, people want, people are interested in doing this, and I think it's an exciting trend.
Yeah, that New Hampshire one is interesting because it goes for several weeks, and they're visiting every single Catholic parish in the state. It's really ambitious, But Zelda, there was one that really stood out. This was a particular parish that does pilgrimages that mm-hmm. leads that, and I think you started to get pretty excited about what they did. But
yeah, I had a little holy envy. Is that what you call it?
That's a good kind of envy, but yes.
there's a parish in Arlington that the parochial vicar there. Has taken parishioners a couple times a year for the last several years to pilgrimages, one in the Camino. They're doing it for the second time this year. They went to Austria, to Italy. and they won't let anyone. He says the pastor said he's gotten a lot of interest, emails from all over the world. People find that this is going on, but but they have to limit it to parishioners. And he says part of the reason is it's really helped build a community at the church. People come back from these trips, these walking pilgrimages, and they have dinner together.
Yep.
It's great.
Well, so incentive, if nothing else, to join the parish.
Yes.
Well, Zelda, thank you so much for that. And we have to have you back, if for no other reason, just to find out if you actually are willing to go into a tent.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about the news that you need to know about with Editor's Corner, with me, Matthew Bunsen, your host, and Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio, with my co-host, Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. And as we were starting our conversation this week, we haven't seen each other for some time. So we thought this was a perfect opportunity to cover some of the stories that we have not really had much of a chance to discuss over these last weeks, slightly pertaining to Pope Leo XIV, but especially what's going on in the country that people need to know about. What's at the very top of your list for stories?
Yeah, I would say right at this moment as we're recording this this week, the big hot story is what's going on in the Diocese of Charlotte. There was the bishop there, Bishop Michael Martin, has initially came out with some restrictions on traditional Latin Mass that pertain, really a continuation of Traditionis Custodis. That's Pope Francis's restrictions on the old Mass, but that quickly morphed into something else when a draft of some other liturgical norms, proposed liturgical norms, was leaked, and ones that aren't in effect right now, but are calling for some sort of eye-raising changes.
Yeah. So. It seems to have just exploded, this story, that the bishop was making this decision based certainly on his right as a bishop to implement Traditionis Custodis as he sees fit. But this has not gone, I think, the way that was probably intended.
No, and in the sense that it's become a national and really an international story. So, you know, the Diocese of Charlotte in North Carolina is a growing diocese. It's a pretty big diocese, but you know it's not a giant archdiocese. People aren't necessarily familiar with it. I think even the Latin Mass population, the best guess that we have of how many people are going to Latin Mass on a weekly basis, maybe about 1,000 people.
Right.
But there's just a lot of tension around these liturgical questions, and it's sort of, you know, opened up a can of worms.
Yeah, you know? And in he references, for example, Pope Francis. So it seems it was drafted apparently prior to Pope Francis's passing. So now here we are in a very different pontificate, all waiting to see. Whenever that comes, it's up to Pope Leo what the new Holy Father is going to do about the question of the Latin Mass, aren't we?
Yes, and it's important to say we've had no indication that he's going to do anything,
right?
Or really needs to in this case. But just for our listeners' benefit, what are some of those, again, proposed draft norms? Well, it's things like taking out all Latin from the Novus Ordo or the regular mass, restricting things like kneeling for when you some people kneel when they receive communion. These norms would prohibit that. Gets into whether or not you should say the St. Michael's prayer after Mass, or even bless yourself after receiving communion. So there's a lot of hot button issues there. Again, it's not it's not something that's in effect, but the very idea that it was proposed is sparking a lot of controversy.
Let's just say that the Bishop of Charlotte's memo, we'll call it that, was granular in its detail. But overall, it's really intended to, can we say that it was intended to eradicate the TLM in the diocese, or is that too far?
I think it is too far. And in fairness to Bishop Martin, who has a pretty good reputation.
Right.
I have some relatives down there. They really think he's a wonderful homilist and has been very active. If you look at his schedule, his weekly schedule, he's really all over the diocese. He's really very out with his people, which is great. And he himself says in all these documents,
yes,
that the issue is unity.
Right.
And he's really striving to get people together and especially on Sunday.
But it's kind of opened up the broader discussions, as you say, of here we are again talking about the Second Vatican Council, the document in particular, Sacrosanctum Concilium, and how it was implemented. So this does have broad ramifications, especially now in social media.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a social media firestorm, unfortunately, for Bishop Martin.
Right. So what else are you looking at?
We have some Father's Day is coming up, and our print issue has a wonderful package titled Fathers of Fathers, and this is stories about priests and their dads. And there's a lot said and known about the special relationship that priests and their mothers have, and that they play a big role
that.
Not so much about dads, So among others, we profile Scott Hahn and his son, who's a priest, and their relationship. So that's something to look out for. And we are also taking a look at there's two states right now that have really crossed a line legislatively. One is in Colorado, where they passed some sweeping transgender requirements that really curtail parental rights. It's a big issue there. The other is in Washington State. As you know, they have plans to really violate the seal of confessional of the confessional. Big legislative challenges, especially for Catholics, for parents. So we're looking at what kind of pushback is on the ground in both those states. So
what's, in your view, the most underreported story happening out there right now in the Catholic world?
Yeah, I would say the economy. And that's a tough one, for us. But there's a lot of economic uncertainty. Inflation has slowed, but if you've been to the grocery store, prices are not necessarily dropping.
Right.
I see a lot of economic uncertainty. People don't really know what to make of the tariffs. I think that's going to be
a Catholic, sort of Catholic social teaching standpoint.
Yeah, there's a lot of themes. It's not, it's not like there's a Catholic position on tariffs, right? But it is affecting. We saw this in our polling, right, during the election. The economy was really, at the top of people's lists among Catholic voters.
Very much so.
So that's a challenge for us to get into those. But that's a big story that's percolating under the radar right now.
Yeah, and I know that in the coming weeks and months, as the Trump administration continues down the road, like we were just talking with Zelda about IVF and other things, it will be on top of all of that. And we still have hanging out there the question of China, don't we?
Exactly. There's a lot. You and I have a lot of catching up to do about Pope Leo. You've got this great new book out, which we could have spent an hour talking about it. But yes, China, the war in Ukraine, another big, you know, there's, it's right. been mentioned the Vatican could host a peace conference. That, the latest I've heard is that won't happen.
So we'll see.
But there's a lot.
Never ending. And that's all for another show in another week. But for this week, that's it for Register Radio. We very much appreciate you tuning in. Remember, for a lot more news, commentary, and analysis, go to ncregister.com. Thank you again so much for joining us. I'm Matthew Bunsen. On behalf of Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, and our producer, Michael McCall, take care and God bless you.